Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I'll be your host this afternoon. This is another in our ongoing series, The Week in Reviews, a chance to sit down one-on-one with someone in the literary world. This week, I have not one, but two guests. The writing and research team of Manny Barling and his wife, Ashley Brooks. They have just published their third book, It's Not Your Fault. Good afternoon to both of you, and thank you for taking time out to talk with us this afternoon.
Well, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Simon, and thank you.
Manny, let's start with you. You're a full-time researcher and writer these days. However, that has not always been the case. Can you tell us a little bit about Manny Barling?
Well, yes, I can. I started life as a lawyer. I spent 30-plus years practicing law. During that time, I represented hospitals, clinics, scores of doctors, and sat on boards and did a lot of physician review and a lot of forensic law, legal aspects of law, including white papers, analysis, and all the things the lawyers do when they're deeply entrenched in medicine. And one day I became seriously ill. I was diagnosed with colon cancer, told it was malignant, that they were going to do surgery, and I had probably 2 years to live by the nature of the two tumors. One was the size of a tennis ball and bright red, and the other one was the size of a golf ball and pretty red. And so I ended up having a radical surgery that I didn't ask for nor want. I went in for a simple surgery and spent 8.5 hours, and they did a bowel resection, cut out about 10 feet of my colon, my ascending colon. Apparently I had appendicitis for about a year and didn't know it, and they took that out, and it started me on an odyssey, and that odyssey of being bedridden in a wheelchair caused me to put on about 140, 150 pounds before it was over. And it didn't matter what I ate, or whether I didn't eat or I ate, I just blew up like a balloon. And it was frustrating, and it caused both myself and Ashley to start wondering why, when every diet didn't work, every food change didn't work, the food pyramid didn't work. So we got up, and at the suggestion of my doctor, we started doing our own research, and boy, I tell you, that research was as addicting as today's food. The minute you start to find out what's wrong with you, you want to read more. And I read more and more, and Ashley read more and more, and she studied more. And what I didn't get, she got. And together we started discovering the ugly little secrets of corporate America and the ugly secrets of medicine, the politics, what's in the food, what isn't in the food. And it caused us to write 4 books. And I would estimate somewhere between, well, we cite about 3,800 to 4,000 books, journals, and studies in our books, but we probably read another 1,500 that we didn't use or that were related to the others. So I probably did more reading than I did in law school and more than I did when I was an undergraduate. So at the end of the day, I found that I knew more about food than the doctors, and Ashley learned more about drugs, ingredients, and foods than probably we ever wanted to know. But in the end, it got me out of a wheelchair. I'm down 100 pounds already and still losing weight. Ashley will discuss her own health issues and how it's helped her. And we believe in the proof in the pudding. So basically the information in our books and what we're going to discuss today are a combination of what we read and the fact that what we did changed our lives. And we found others dating back 130 years whose lives have changed. So in the end of the day, we found a whole different life. And wouldn't you know, the one day we don't lock up all the phones, it actually rings. So for all those people who listen to this interview and have had their life interrupted at home or at work by a telephone, I'm sure they all understand all that. So that's probably a pretty good nutshell of how we got to where we are.
Ashley, I'm going to ask you the same question. I know that you've had some previous careers. What did you do prior to to getting involved in all of this research and writing?
Well, I started out, you know, working my parents' restaurant as a chef. And oh, is he talking to you?
Yeah, he's talking to me.
It's the phone.
Did you took it off. Yes, I did.
Oh, I'm sorry, Simon. With a confusion, the phone. I did what all husbands do. I grabbed it. So.
It's obviously somebody insistent because they're now calling you on your cell phone. I can't get away from the phone, Simon. Okay, the phone is still ringing. I grew up in Ohio, and I, after graduating from college in Ohio in Youngstown, I worked in a 1,000-bed emergency room. I grew up also studying music, so I actually had the privilege of studying with somebody who taught at the Metropolitan Opera House. But because my parents, my mom was a nurse and my grandmother, they were both nurses. They, I'm sorry, one second. The phone is still driving us all crazy here. So go ahead, Manny, you talk.
You know, I think I have to give a class on phones. So, you know, basically speaking, Ashley and I came to this together. All she had to do is hit the hold button.
Okay.
You know, where are we, Simon? I'm sorry.
Okay, moving right along. It's not your fault. It is a very, very interesting read. Very much you discuss the subject that is so popular right now.
Okay, Simon, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
I'm so sorry. So I was telling you that I, after graduating from college as a registered nurse, and studying music in Youngstown, Ohio, I moved to Chicago. I had the privilege of working with Dr. Randa, who was the father of environmental medicine. And then I moved into Chicago and worked in the inner city of Chicago. Became very, very ill and spent 2 years of my life on chemo. And the one thing I understood at that point was juicing and vitamins and food were vital to life. And I was given 2 years to live, and that was many years ago. And that started the whole odyssey.
Wow.
Go ahead, Manny.
What, in many ways, it's not your fault. Looks at the whole problem of obesity in North America, and it is a serious problem. Issue. I see segments on the TV all the time. I read articles about it. You know, it's a growing problem and a growing drain on the entire health industry. And yet, you know, I look at Europe, and yes, there are some cultural differences, but essentially, Europeans watch the same TV programs. They enjoy all of the same modern conveniences. There are the same fast food chains, similar products on the market shelves. Of course, I have to admit that Cadbury chocolate is far superior to Hershey's. But, I mean, that's personal choice.
Anything's far superior to Hershey's, which is now high fructose corn syrup with just a touch of chocolate in it.
Right, but my question is, why is there this huge difference in the obesity rates?
Well, the differences boil down to one simple thing. Europe governs the ingredients in the food that they're eaten by the people in Europe better than the United States does. And in many respects, as Ashley points out, American foods are not welcome in Europe because of what's in them. Basically, Europeans feel that our food is made up of primarily junk, and they just don't want the people there to eat it. It's that simple.
And one of the biggest problems is the fact that most of American food, if it's not organic, it's genetically modified. And the genetically modified foods make people very ill. So it's in the genetically engineered foods and what goes into the food itself, and a lot of, like, they don't allow the genetically engineered foods from America. The Europeans will not allow that in their food source. In fact, a lot of the things that are in Japan, they won't even allow genetically engineered soy into their soy. And I think a lot of the problems are we have not evolved enough to metabolize the huge amount of chemicals and the genetic engineering that has occurred in the food that our bodies just can't break down. And it has led to the obesity in this country and to, the stats. 1 in 3 women right now will have cancer in their lifetime. 1 in 2 men will have cancer in their lifetime. 1 in 6 children are being born with neurological damage and problems, or neurobehavioral problems. And it's coming from the food sources, it's coming from the ingredients in that food sources that we just cannot metabolize and we cannot break down.
It's interesting. You mentioned GMO. Now, research that I've done, albeit it's not nearly as comprehensive as the research you've done, apparently even things like American herbs are verboten for sale in Europe because of their GMO content. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. They have banned our spices in Europe because of the GMO, as well as MSG. MSG has been, and other ingredients have quietly been added to our spices. So every time you grind that pepper shaker into your food, you're grinding pesticides and GMO ingredients into your food. So you have the food, the bad ingredients, on top of more bad ingredients.
Manny, a question for you. You and Ashley paint a pretty bleak picture in It's Not Your Fault. The bleak picture of the role that Big Pharma and Big Food are playing in the obesity problem. Have they switched ethics for profits?
No, I think they've always had these poor ethics. They're just coming to the surface now thanks to a better press, the internet, more books being available. And sometimes I joke with friends that if I wanted to research this book 15 years ago, I would not have been able to do it the way I did. I would have had to go to every single library at UCLA or USC's medical library to try and find these books, and it would have taken 10 times longer. So much like the Gutenberg Press brought the world a new line of communication, the internet has allowed many of us to research in ways that we never thought were possible.
I was very impressed with It's Not Your Fault. What sort of general feedback are you getting about the book?
Well, right now we've had several excellent five-star reviews on Amazon, and it's only been out a short period of time, but the reception's been outstanding. We have a problem in our country, and people are looking for answers, and we believe the answers are in our book. And those answers are clear. They're supported by a tremendous amount of research. And as we say about our book, if you don't believe us, just go to the sites on the back of the book and read them yourself. And I think that's important because so many times people say to me, oh, no, that can't be true. And I say, well, the source is in the back of the book. Just go check the back of the book. Go dig it up. Get it. You can get it on almost every site we have on the Internet. So just go to the Internet. And you'll find it.
And
obviously, the big question is, where can people buy it?
The book or the resources? The books. The book they can get at our website, howtoeliminatepain.com, or at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and about 39 other booksellers. And if they don't have it, of course, they'll just order it for you, and it'll be in about 2 days. So either way, you can get the book in almost any way you'd like.
Ashley, I'm sorry, I cut you off. You were about to say?
Well, one of the many interesting things I found when we were doing the research for It's Not Your Fault is going into pregnancy to actually look at where addictions actually begin with each individual and examining the 40-week of that it takes for full development for a baby and the type of food people were eating that allowed to early obesity, and it starts right in the fetus. So that was an interesting point of something that was added to the book.
I've read three of your four books, and what caught my attention was the very distinctive change in style. It's Not Your Fault is a lot less clinical and in my mind aimed at a wider sector of the general public. Was that a conscious decision or just happenstance during the writing process?
Well, it's a combination of both. We were blessed with having two books that came first, which allowed us to put a lot of technical data into those other books. So we didn't feel the need to write a great many things that we felt the need to write in the other books. And in some cases, we suggest to people to read the other books so we didn't have to, again, go through all the complicated stuff.
In fact, the three books that I have read complement each other. And I was thinking about this last night. What order would I recommend people read them in? And I think my choice would be from latest to earliest. It's Not Your Fault. In some ways, lays the groundwork for the inflammation, arthritis, and gout book. The exact title I can't remember. I'm sorry.
It's arthritis, inflammation, gout, Crohn's, IBD, and IBS. And I struggle with it myself sometimes. You know, retrospectively, we might have had a simpler title for everybody.
No, we may on the second edition.
and that book, in turn, lays the groundwork for the Manny's diet and enzyme formula. What are your thoughts? Do you agree with me or disagree?
Well, first of all, I think it depends on what the individual needs and interests are. Obviously, if someone has a Crohn's or issues with that are severe, and most people who buy the book who have those problems they need help right away. So that's an area that is determined by need. But if you're interested in why things are where we are in our society, then I think the better choice for a great many people is to start with It's Not Your Fault, and then look back at what interests them in that book and then decide which one of the previous books fulfill their needs. But, you know, basically, it's a medical school education on what's going on in America today if you take the time to read all of them, which I don't think most people will. And it will change lives. Everybody who's read this book in some way has had their life changed.
Let's talk about writing in general for a moment. I'm always interested in finding out about co-authoring and how that works. It sounds like a surefire way to start a domestic squabble. I mean, occasionally my wife and I will put out a joint article, and that there is one thing guaranteed. It will cause a disturbance in the fourth.
There's no doubt about it, Simon.
Right.
But what's great about writing is that when there's moments where you agree and you go, oh my gosh, this is fabulous, and the moments you don't agree, the don't agree causes you to go deeper into research, and it causes you to rethink what's been said so that the work becomes better, I think. Don't you, Manny?
I don't have any of the views that either of you have. To me, writing is like any other job. You just get up and you do it. And I think the hardest part that men have working with women is they sometimes get emotional about projects when men tend to just do their work and be more objective about it. So that's where our problems come from, is I just view this as another job, and sometimes I actually take some of this more personally.
Now, of course I do, because I'm very technical. I want to make sure that 100% of the information is correct. There's too much bad information out there, and there's too much information that is just almost there or not 100%. So it takes going below the first surface to keep looking and looking to make sure, like, all the research comes from independent scientists. And are there other backings of that independent scientific data, like the genetically engineered, fully understanding it, so that understanding how inflammation occurs and how people gain weight and how they get diabetes and other illnesses secondary to all of this. So that's where that comes from with me.
Manny, you must have had many adventures over the past 13 years. Would you like to give us some of the low points, if you will? You were in a wheelchair for quite some time.
Yes, I bounced in and out of a wheelchair for what seemed like a few years, and every time I thought I'd got rid of the darn thing, it came back and it would bite me. So, you know, I just couldn't seem to shake it. What happens is anyone who has Crohn's, sooner or later will learn that what they have is a sensitivity to food, which is something the doctors did not tell me. And I sort of discovered on my own. So if you eat one wrong thing, and by one wrong thing I mean a genetically modified food, for example. I had no idea, since Ashley pressed me to eat basically off the food pyramid, and you know, which is fine, except the foods were genetically modified and they were making me ill. So I would have these really healthy meals and they would make me violently ill. So even though you may think you're eating healthy, the net result is that the food isn't healthy for you, but you don't realize why, because nobody tells you why.
That is, you know, there's something wrong here. I thought organizations like the FDA were tasked with keeping us healthy.
Well, the FDA is a political animal. The FDA is hampered by ongoing conflicts of interest. It has no independence. Basically, everybody in a high position in the FDA is appointed by the president, and they usually come from companies like Pfizer and Merck and Monsanto. So basically, they're all foxes in the hen house. The scientists, the people who work very hard every day to protect America, their views are squashed by political appointees from the food and drug companies who are there to protect their former employees. And most of them, when they leave the FDA, go back to the corporations at big salaries. There's one, Arthur Hull Hayes, who ushered in aspartame in the 80s, who was appointed by Ronald Reagan for no other purpose than to help the industry bring in, Donald Rumsfeld at the time was running Merck, and to bring in aspartame. A year later, he quit and went to work for the manufacturers of aspartame at a $20,000 a month salary and never showed up in the office. It was strictly a payoff. So this goes on every day. So,
wow.
So if you wonder why we have all these recalls, well, it's because no one's watching the hen house. And another typical example, when genetically modified foods came in, Monsanto lobbied the president, Mr. Bush, to appoint a gentleman by the name of Taylor, who was their lawyer, Monsanto's lawyer, and he became a high-ranking official in the FDA, and his sole purpose was to get genetically modified foods approved for use. Well, the majority of the scientists in the FDA disapproved of genetically modified foods as much as we do. So over all of their comments, the FDA issued a statement saying that there's not one scintilla of evidence, not one bit of evidence, as to why this is dangerous to humans, and yet every scientist who worked for the FDA said it was dangerous. So, again, politics trumped that. The same way big oil gets away with it. I mean, all I have to do is look at the BP oil rig disaster, and you take a look at a report that was published today showing they're still not doing anything about it. And I think that all the people who live in the Gulf agree the government is complicit with the BP, and covering everything up has helped BP more than they have the citizens. And that's really sad. And that's the major problems with the FDA. But the problem basically is, I think every American I talk to agrees that corporations are controlling America. Some people are against big oil, so they're upset with the oil companies. Some are against big pharma, they're upset with the food companies. Some are upset with the media. You and I have talked about how the media is now so corporate that it's just terrible. So across the board, every American is concerned with some element of corporations overreaching, and they've extended that to the food industry.
I also think it's the big thing, as you're saying, Manny, is the fact that the it's follow the money, which is what you talk about. And if you follow the money, like, say, Manny was saying, the food pyramid group, and let's go to the RDA, which is on everything,
on
the side of the cans.
The food pyramid first.
Okay.
You know, the food pyramid is basically put together by corporations in America. The current food pyramid, pyramid was done without any help from any independent sources. It got so bad, Harvard University printed its own food pyramid in objection to it, as well as other health groups. But yet the food pyramid, which was sponsored and put together by American food corporations, what we call Big Food, is the official food pyramid for the country because of their political might. And let's go a step farther before you come back to the other ones. You know, we talk about dietitians and how every bit of advice I've heard from a dietitian has been horrible. I lay in my bed, you know, sutured to the gills, unable to walk. I spent 3 months just recovering from the initial surgery with a dietitian giving me a diet that made me laugh. I threw it in the trash when she left. It was so stupid. And I began to research it, and I found out the American Dietetic Association controls the power to grant credentials to dietitians. They control the Commission on Dietetic Registration. So anyone who practices a dietitian cannot be licensed without approval of dietetic registration. And they basically are funded by PepsiCo, Mars. I mean, candy bar people, you know, are funding dietetic registration. Kellogg's, you know, Coca-Cola, Hershey's, and GlaxoSmithKline, who's one of the third largest pharmaceutical company in the world, is also on that board. So here we are. We have, again, the foxes determining who's licensed. Well, every dietetic follows the principles that they advocate that permits licensing, and if they have any independent thought, they're gone. They have the power to prosecute these people. So right now, 46 out of 50 states, 90% of our country, the licensing of dietitians is controlled by corporate America. Ashley, you wanted to get into the RDAs.
Absolutely, because that's what people are looking at. They're looking at the side of the can and going, oh, the RDA, let's do this safe. And again, it's who's funding it. And people like him and M&M Mars, the Mead Johnson Group, Nabisco Foods. I mean, you take the list, and that's just, they only show part of the list of actually who's putting the fund together and funding the scientists to do the RDA. Now, and they end up with there's a book out called Ridiculous RDA, and it covers that, where, you know, people are depending upon looking at the food pyramid group and looking at this, and it just doesn't work. It has to become an individual thing, and how are you metabolizing? And if you cannot metabolize or break down what's put into your food, you're going to get fat. That's the bottom line. You will get obese, and you will get sick. That's the bottom line on the whole thing.
The question I have is, should there be a change in legislation to fix the FDA, fix the whole way the system works? I mean, what is the solution?
Well, there is no solution because no one will have the power to effectuate one. We've long advocated that the office of the FDA commissioner should be a non-political office and should be actually people should run for election, be elected to a post. But that's never going to happen because the food industry has too much power, and the only way you could do it was to have literally a congressional a bill form, not unlike what people have been threatening to do on other issues. So as long as these people are in power and they have this kind of political might and ability to donate money to politicians, I don't see it changing. And let me give you an example. In California, we were disgusted with the insurance company situations there, and we still are. And so we basically lobbied through a law that made the insurance commissioner an elected official. So now the insurance commissioner has to run for an office, and It took a little while, but we managed to weed out all of the industry-supported politicians. So now rate hikes in California are very, very difficult to get. Right now, Blue Cross is trying to get one, and every time they try it, they get stopped in their tracks. So that's sort of where things are. But does this country have the ability to stand up to big food and to make them suddenly start following the rules? It would take, I think, a revolution.
But it starts simply, it starts in the market. You know, if you don't buy non-organic food and you stop buying packaged food and you only buy organic, you're going to put those kind of industry people out of business. And eventually, I think there has to be, don't you think, Manny? Along the way, it's going to have to change other things.
Well, that will change, but that doesn't change the FDA. Simon's question is, how do we change the FDA?
It's tough because they're giving all so much money to the lobbyists, and the lobbyists are giving so much money to Congress that it's tough.
Well, I think that every American would like to change what's going on with big oil, all the problems that we've had in recent years. How are we going to do that? That's another question that follows the same line. How do we change anything in this country that's controlled by big corporations that we don't like? And the answer is, you can do it by voting, but there are things that you cannot do enough of. And in this case, I don't think that changing the politics of our country is that easy.
Okay, I want to change track just slightly here. Big Pharma and Big Food are the 800-pound gorillas, right? They're not nice people to deal with. And there are a number of instances that you have cited in your books where independent research has been buried and careers placed in jeopardy because the findings were not in favor of Big Food and Big Pharma. Does it bother you at all that you're making enemies in high places by writing your books?
You know, Simon, I took an oath as a nurse, and that oath is very simple. I cannot harm someone else, nor can I allow someone else to be harmed. So to step out in front, and initially I was terrified of saying anything, but then I realized as Manny has gotten well and as I've gotten well, because I became very, very, very ill, and as we both have become ill and we realize the truth behind everything, you have to step forward. You have, and if each person steps forward and starts speaking out and starts helping one another, that's, you know, if one person reads our book and gets well, we've accomplished something wonderful. So no, Simon, I'm not. How are you, Manny, with that?
I don't have any feelings about it.
Manny's a big boy.
It's just that, you know, to me, the whole thing's a waste of time. You have to go to the issues that people have to look at, why they're overweight, what our problems are, and they don't relate much to what we're discussing right now. The issue that has to be resolved is, if America understands why they're struggling with weight, they understand why they're becoming ill, and they understand the source of all of these, then they're more likely to effectuate some change. But they're not going to effectuate change. You know, it's an old expression. And a friend of mine's mother used to say this to me when I was young, a young man. I would go to her sometimes in my 20s and go, why is this happening to me? And she would say to me, you'll never change until you realize the blood on the wall is yours. And that's where America is right now. Right now, the blood on the wall is basically theirs. The money, everything, the poor health, we're being sold food that makes us sick. The same companies run by drug companies to sell you the medicine to get better, but they know the food they're selling you is making you ill. For example, Doritos has 39 ingredients. 36 of them are chemicals. It only takes 3 ingredients to make corn chips at home. And as a result, you know, people are sitting there woofing down corn chips every day. They're making them ill. In the 1960s, only 1 million pounds of MSG was sold. In 2009, it was almost 440 million pounds of MSG. You can't buy it in the market, so where did the other 439 million pounds go? It went into the food you buy. It's hidden in clean labels to avoid detection. Clean labels is the art of adding MSG and other food ingredients like yeast extract, for example, maltodextrin, which is 14% MSG.
Hydrolyzed anything.
Anything. In our books, we have a list of the 140 ingredients in which MSG is hidden. There's a recent TV commercial from Swanson showing a chicken running away or a turkey running away from a customer saying, no MSG, no MSG. But if you look at their chicken broth, this product they claim it has no MSG, it has yeast extract and other ingredients in which they hide MSG.
With GMO stuff. It's so toxic.
Forget about the GMO for a moment. The point is, Swanson's is lying. If you go spend that money on an ad and you run an ad and say, I don't have MSG in something, when they know that they put MSG in another product, to hide it from you and then bold-facedly look you in the eye with a commercial and lie to you, that's the type of corporate dishonesty we're talking about. When MSG was a problem in the late 60s with what they call a Chinese syndrome, restaurant syndrome, people were getting sick, their hearts were pounding. We found out that basically 60% of our country is allergic to MSG. The companies swore they would take it out of the food. One day later, it was right back in baby food under yeast extract and soy extract. And yes, if you see soy extract on the ingredients label, that's MSG. So baby,
you know, I'm shocked to hear that. And it is information that I've, you know, heard before. I remember the big rebellion. You know, MSG. Oh, it's really bad for you. And everyone said, oh, well, if you don't like it, we're going to remove it. It's a con job, isn't it?
It is a con job, and especially one of the worst things with MSG. Well, let's do the rat study. They give rats MSG to fatten them up so they can find out and do rat studies. Now, what do people think are happening to this MSG in them? And there's as many as, oh, you can have 5-6 different forms of MSG within the same product, processed food that you're eating. You go to a restaurant, the same thing happens. And then it turns this thing on in your brain that fools you and says, oh, I want more, so they can't stop eating. So people get fat. They'll get fat just from eating MSG. And it harms, and for babies, oh, my gosh, pregnant moms, it's really harmful because it causes neurological damage.
In fact, it was
one
out of six children these days have some neurological behavioral problem.
And that study does not include from 1 to 3 years old where autism happens and all these other illnesses happen, including fat babies.
Well, besides the fat babies, we cite countless scientific articles that say that if a mother eats food with MSG, it affects the child. It causes childhood diabetes because the fetus cannot process MSG and all these other food chemicals any more than we can as an adult. So if I can't, and Ashley and other listeners can't handle MSG, what do they expect of a 2-ounce fetus with no blood-brain barrier or protective organs and I don't believe their liver and kidneys take form till a few months. What is it doing to them?
That part's developed within, but it's the neurological. They're still developing their nerves and their brains within that first 3-week period.
There's a direct correlation between the increase in these chemicals in food and the use of genetically modified fruits and vegetables to the increase in cancer, breast cancer, childhood diabetes, autism. My generation had none of these problems. I remember a child when I was 11 years old in my class dying of some rare tropical cancer that no one ever heard of. And that's the only student I lost in my entire time until I got out of high school and the Vietnam War was in full bloom. Now, it's not unheard of. Kids are going to funerals all the time. Kids die of cancer, this or that. Every time I turn on a football game, there's some football player who's 20-something years old who's surviving cancer. I mean,
a friend of mine just told me yesterday that a friend of his child at 10 years old just had her leg amputated from cancer. I mean, it's in the food.
It's definitely in the food. If you know, I have an expression, if we are what we eat, and Americans are what they eat, then they're basically chemical dump sites for big food and big pharma, because it's all chemicals.
Didn't Dr. Sanjay Gupta of CNN fame come out with some quote that we're walking corn chips or something like that?
The word is we're corn chips walking. And that's because almost every food you can walk up and down the grocery shelf. Everything you find will have corn solids, high fructose corn syrup, and other things. So it's very rare in a market, in a packaged food, or the foods you buy in a fast food store or any restaurant don't contain some type of corn. And as you know, you interviewed Dr. Daniel Dantini in Florida, who says that this causes food sensitivity and intolerance, and that one of the things causing health problems for Americans is they're basically eating the same food over and over again. And he cites in his books that most autoimmune diseases and chronic conditions are caused by responses in the digestive tract due to delayed food sensitivities. And these food sensitivities are to these chemicals. And let's take high fructose corn syrup for a moment. It's one of Ashley's favorites because they cook it up in a vat. They take this corn that people can't even eat, because it's not edible.
Genetically modified.
They cook in a vat with a synthetic enzyme and chemicals that they won't disclose.
Acid.
And then they skim the top off, and they turn that into basically high fructose corn syrup, which, by the way, is just about how you make crystal meth in a lab, only different ingredients. In fact, I'm not sure the ingredients are really that much different. So at the end of the day, you know, you're talking about people who are eating, you know, basically artificial substances that become that your body's not used to. In 10,000 or 70,000 years of human existence, no one's ever ate this food before until the last 20 years.
And what's really about breaking down the content of the toxic foods, your liver is a major function for that. It's a major organ. So you're putting high fructose corn syrup into your body, and your major organ, it causes inflammation of the organ. And so you can't break that down. And it actually causes the first stage of liver failure because it causes fatty liver.
Well, let's explain why. What happens is you're eating a foreign substance, and I always equate it to watching a Star Wars movie, particularly the second one, where you know basically they're going through space dodging all these asteroids, and basically that's what happens to your body. You're eating these foreign substances doctors call foreign invaders. Your body can't digest them. They get in your colon along with bacteria. They don't come out. Some of them are capable of penetrating your colon and getting in your blood system. Well, your blood system can't handle it, and it's somewhat like watching that old Waukel Welch movie from the 60s when they're flying around the human body and dodging everything. Well, now we're putting in these things that are like mini asteroids that come to rest in your kidneys, liver, everywhere in your body, and they basically wreak havoc because your body can't get rid of them. And then they build up, which is what causes the inflammation, and also causes weight gain because your body sends antibodies, fluids, liquids, everything trying to remove them, but it can't remove them, so it just stores it up. So, you know, you look around in the last 20 years, we've watched TV teenagers grow like mushrooms out in the field. They just start blowing up like balloons, including myself, because this all came into vogue after my surgery. So little did I know, I was eating these genetically modified foods with all these chemicals, and much like the teenagers you see criticized on the news, I was blowing up like a balloon, just like they were.
I want to come back to corn, but before I do that, we're about to lose our live listeners. Fear not, folks. The entire program will be recorded, and if you tune in to www.bloggernews.net in a couple of hours, we will have the link running. But let's move back to corn for a second. I know that both of you have watched the wonderful documentary King Corn, and there's a great segment in there. The two guys have grown their acre of corn. They are so excited. They whip off a couple of ears, you know, boil it up, and they are so looking forward to fresh corn, you know, on the cob. They take one bite, spit it out, and come out with some comment like, "My God, that's not corn."
And it isn't corn. It looks like corn, but it isn't corn. It has a tough outer shell. The problem with the genetically engineered is because everybody knows what DNA is. So anybody who's watched CSI, you know, Miami or any of those shows knows DNA is with everything. So you take one little DNA, which starts off in a lab, and they put it on a little petri dish. And then they open this thing up, and it starts out as a BT toxin. And it's either that or it's an E. coli. Or they do a promoter virus to make sure that this DNA can repeat itself. And they create that corn. It's made in a lab. That seed can never, ever, ever, you can never remove the BT toxin from it. You can never remove that cauliflower virus. You can never remove any of the toxins that are put in that DNA, because that's part of that fruit and that vegetable and everything people are eating, including the corn. It has a tough outer shell. It's filled with pesticides, and it's highly toxic. So, yeah, of course you can't eat it. I mean, the thought of that, does it make you want to spit it out, Simon?
No, it just amazes me. I mean, I have driven through the corn belt, and mile after mile of this beautiful-looking corn, and none of it's actually edible.
It's amazing to me, too. Even the farmers won't eat their own corn. They cannot sustain their own livelihood off of the food that they're growing because it's genetically engineered here in America. Now, Europe they can, but not here in America. And what's terrible about this corn is the fact that not only, as Manny said, it's in everything, but as Dr. Dantini pointed out, he discovered after surgery that his patients were having a horrible time and a horrible reaction, and they were having cardiac arrhythmias, and which means a fast heart, and their blood pressure was off, and they were having terrible reactions after surgery, patient after patient after patient of his. And then he looked at the actual IV, and there in the IV was high fructose corn syrup in the IV. So the liquid that was going into his veins was high fructose corn syrup. So once he cut that out, he no longer had problem with any of his patients. Now that alone, it should be a scientific data enough for everybody to see what's going to happen if you put that in your mouth and eat it every day, every single meal, including in your vitamins, it's in your pills, it's in, you know, your everyday everything.
We're just about out of time, but I do want to ask you, what is the next project, and when can we expect to see it?
Well, that we're not sure. We're in the middle of Manny Nash's Organic Cookbook. It's a book designed for families of four that will allow them to basically follow some simple recipes and cook for family without having shall we say, to buy these packaged foods that are making everybody so ill. So hopefully this will be something that will benefit people who are looking for a better way of life.
And with Manny's diet and enzyme formula, it helps people to create their own diet rather than doing somebody else's diet for them. It'll teach them it'll teach each person how to make their own individual diet based on their own genetics and their own health issues.
I really want to thank you both for taking part this afternoon. And I also want to wish you every success with It's Not Your Fault. And I'm pretty certain that we'll be talking again soon, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and thank you to all the listeners.
Okay, till next time, this is Simon Barrett saying thank you very much to Manny Barling and Ashley F. Brooks for talking with us this afternoon. And we will be back on the air next Saturday. Till then, goodbye.